Welcome to JJB podcast, and today I have a guest from a former head coach of Honka Women First Team. Welcome, Omar.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
Better. Yeah, much better now. A little bit difficult couple weeks, months, but now I think much better, resting and getting some rest and back to exercising and much better.
Can you tell us a little bit, couple of months, what have you been doing?
Nothing, honestly, nothing. Just kind of sleeping, resting. Now trying to exercise a bit more, and then of course trying to plan out a little bit my future. See what I'm going to do in the future. But for the most part, just been staying away from football a little bit. Of course, watching football a lot, other teams, other leagues, visiting some clubs as well, just to see how things are done, but trying to take my mind a little bit off football, but it's not easy.
Yeah, it's if you love football, so yeah. it's always in your mind.
Mm.
Can you tell us a bit about your coaching path? What have you done before, and what kind of a path you have?
Yeah, my path is a little bit different, I would say. Strange, different, fast. It went really fast, I would say. Started coaching, of course, little camps here and there. I'm from Vancouver, Canada, so I started coaching there a little bit. Nothing serious, just little camps, kids here and there, just to make some money while I was in university. And then from there, yeah, moved to Germany, played in Germany for about a year, year and a half, 2 years, and then moved to Finland, played a little bit here, then started coaching in Peko, actually. Peko Helsinki, started coaching 12-year-olds. Nothing serious. I think they were in the fourth division or something like that. Very, very, very low level, but it was something that I enjoyed doing. I loved being with those kids. And then from there, it kind of took over. I got attached to coaching and kind of fell in love with it. And yeah, from there, started coaching a bit, you know, with the B juniors, girls' side. I coached in PAPI as well on the boys' side, 2004 borns. And then from there, went back to PECO, coached with the BSM girls, and then met people along the way who were very, very nice to me and helped me out. You know, I got to introduce to kind of the Palolito side, the Helsinki Piri and regional camps and district camps and things like that. Helmari tournament, did that a couple times. And then, yeah, from there, went on to apply for the talent coach job that opened up in FC Honka. I was a talent coach for 2 years there. And at the same time, since you're a talent coach, you're also part of the coaching staff of the regional team. There was four of us there in the Helsinki area, or Uusimaa area, I guess, and with the regional teams. I was also part of some camps with the U19 national team, helping out there. And then after many hours of working that, I was also an assistant coach with Rossi, who was the head coach at the time of the women's team. I was an assistant coach there for 2 years. And then from there, I became the head coach after that. And then, yeah, and I did my licenses as well. Started off with my D license about 6 years ago or something like that. And then moved into my C license, and then UEFA B, and then UEFA A, and then now UEFA Pro. So yeah, pretty fast journey to where I'm at now. So that's kind of my path.
From Canada to Germany,
yeah.
And from Germany to Finland. Why did you choose Finnish football environment? Or
didn't really choose it. I had friends who were playing here as well. Friends who were playing here, and you know, I talked to a few of them, and they were playing. One was playing in Kajaani, one was playing in Vikingit, one was playing somewhere here in Helsinki. I forgot the name of it as well, so decided just to give it a shot and see what it's like. And of course, I didn't play too long here. I was only playing maybe for 2 years or so, and then I started coaching at the same time. So coaching really took over. I was more coaching here than playing.
What is the sparkle, or the what is your sparkle in football? Why the football is so interesting? You are passionate about football.
I would say two different things. Am I passionate about football, or am I passionate about coaching? So I would say I would separate those two. I love football. I like being around. I like watching it. I like seeing but passion came from coaching, really. I think coaching brought on more passion towards football. I'm not a diehard fan. I don't follow like a team, like I'm not a football fan per se. Of course I watch many teams and I love watching different teams, but I'm not would call myself a fan, because a fan is somebody who was following a team. And so I wouldn't really go that route, but I love the game. And I think coaching, I love playing it, of course. I love playing it. I always love playing it. But I think coaching is what's really helped me hold on to that passion, because I like seeing other teams play, how they play, how they do things, how the players improve, how to coach different players. So I don't think football is I love it, but I think coaching is more a passion than football is a passion. I love football. I love being around it, but I think coaching is the passion.
Okay, let's go a bit deeper to coaching.
Yeah.
Why coaching is so interesting?
I think what I like most about it is helping the players and seeing how they develop and how they improve and how they grasp onto an idea. And if you give them an idea and they buy into it, and then you see your idea kind of pushed onto them, and then they can develop that, and then you see it in the training, and then you see it on the field, and then you see them develop and you see them get better, and then you see that kind of happiness or excitement that they get from doing something that they trained or something they've been, working their whole lives towards. So for me, it's helping the players. And then I think that's really what I've and of course the competition side. I love winning. I hate losing. I want to compete. I wanna, bring ideas to the game, or bring ideas to the trainings, or build a professional environment for the players. And it's all of it. It's competing, and it's also helping the players.
So helping players and seeing them to grow
Yeah.
and develop. Other thing, your education, the UEFA education or the certifications, can you tell a bit more about your education process or your how you describe the path with the Palo-Lito and those education certifications from D to UEFA Pro?
Yeah, honestly, when I started, and you can ask any of the educators who were with me, and I had no idea what I was doing. It's like, but luckily I had very good educators who didn't push their ideas onto me. I think that's what kind of helped me a lot. I don't know what the process is in different countries or how it is, but I think here in Finland and in Palo-Lito, what I found in the education system of those courses is that they don't try to push an idea. They kind of let you make the mistake and let you build your own ideas. And from the D course, of course, it was very basic, just kind of learning a little bit how to, make a plan or make a training plan and how to execute the training plan. It was very, very simple. From the C course, now it's the UEFA C, so it's completely different. But that C course was similar, more of an 11-v-11 type. We did a lot of, actually, what I don't remember what we did, but I know we were outside a lot on the training ground trying to, okay, this person is doing this training. We watched another team's training. So it was all about the training side of it. And then, of course, learning the how to build a cycle, how to build a week, how to build, a kind of the whole week leading up to a game. So it was very kind of structured in that way. And then the B course came more, the physical side of it. They started introducing more physical side and how to combine the physical with the tactical, and how to combine the mental with the social and stuff like that. So it was kind of bring everything together. Then with the A course, it was a longer process, and it was more about how do you build the whole year? How do you build the whole year? And then also they dive into the individual development also of a player. So you would take two or three players and you would work with them for a whole year. And then you also include that into your, so you combine the team aspect with the individual aspect. So how do you train a team, but also how do you develop those individuals at the same time? I personally didn't like the A course because it was all in terms of a lot of PowerPoints, a lot of work. But it helped me in that sense that once you do the work, it becomes natural. But of course, in the time, you don't want to do all those PowerPoints and all that work. But at it helped a lot now understanding why we did it. And then with the Pro course, honestly, that was my favorite one because it was number one, it was with a lot of good coaches around us who were also in the course. So we had a lot of Ekstraliga coaches and top coaches from our league as well. So it was nice to be in that group. I think we had a very good group of coaches. And then it was a lot of discussion as well. It wasn't a lot of kind of, we had, of course, a final project and everything, and that was a lot of work. But in terms of what we learned in those courses and visiting other clubs, it was a lot of discussion, ideas, and also kind of other coaches' experiences. I think I learned more from the other coaches' experiences and also the educators. They were also coaches as well. We had Toke, we had Siku, we had those very, very, very top coaches who were very experienced. So I would ask them questions also just to try to learn from what they experienced. It might not be right or wrong, but it's still their experience, and you can take what they did. We had a lot of good lectures on how to lead a team, how to react to different cultures, how to act with different cultures. If you're coaching, five Finnish players and then five Spanish ones and then five from Africa and then five from the USA, then how do you combine and make that work as a team? Because this person likes to be spoken to differently, and this person reacts differently. This Finnish player maybe doesn't, need that much feedback all the time. And, so you have to combine all those cultures together. And that's where I learned the most, I think, on how to be a head coach.
How do you describe yourself as a coach? What are your principles
In terms of
in
play.
coaching or in terms of playing football?
Yeah,
In philosophical way can be also mentioned if you want.
I mean it has changed. When I first took over as head coach, I didn't really know. You kind of see what other head coaches were doing, and my first year was, okay, this head coach is this way, this head coach is this way, and okay, this head coach is this way. So you only kind of do what you saw, and you don't have your own personality to it. And that was tough because I didn't really know what I was as a head coach. And then my second year, I understood more of what I wanted from myself, what I wanted from the team, my values as well of how I wanted to be, how I expected team to be as well, how they act and how they behave. And so values wise for me, it's of course family is very important. So as you come in, your family. So for me, if I'm, if I have a brother or sister or mom, dad, we can, it's honest. It's direct. I'm very direct. And the best relationships I have with other people or coaches or players, both sides are direct and they're very honest towards each other. And yeah, kind of have that family value that I got your back. I'll defend you no matter what. And, if we can fight, we can argue, but don't worry. It doesn't mean that I'm just gonna kick you out or get rid of you or whatever it is. So we kind of solve it. We have to solve it. So that's how it is in my family. I'm not just because I fight with my brother or my dad doesn't mean that they're not my brother or my dad the next day. So that's the number one thing. Then the next thing is we focused a lot on the next action, the next action. So football is a game of mistakes. There's nobody who's going to go on and make zero mistakes. So we got to make mistakes. But the good thing about football is that you have a next action to make that right. So how you react to it is more important
So
than.
there are always new opportunities.
Exactly. And that's the best part about it. So of course can get angry and there's emotions in football and you can get any coach gets mad at some mistake or if the mistake gets repeated, of course you have emotions. But I think we don't get angry at the mistakes, we more get angry at the lack of effort, maybe of the next action. Are you trying to make up for that? It's okay if you make it, but let's put in the work afterwards and try to, recover and help out your teammates or help out the team in that sense. And then winning mentality. You have to want to win all the time. You have to want to win games. Winning actions, winning duels, winning in everything. So that's something that I really, really believe in. And of course, once you win, it's nice. When you lose, it's not so nice, but you still have to come and compete and stay consistent every day.
Before we go to the football trends, general trends internationally, but I will take this competition and the winning mentality. How do you see, in a context of Finland, the words winning mentality and competition compared to other countries or your background or?
Yeah. I don't want to speak for everybody because I haven't seen everybody. I've only seen what I've been around. And, I, of course, only on the women's side, I haven't been around a top level, on the men's side, or on the boys' side, or a BSM boy. So I've heard stories, but of course, I don't want to, it's not me seeing it. But when it comes to competition and winning mentality, it's a different animal elsewhere. It's really, one story I always tell is when I was playing in Germany and I came over here and I started training and I would make a pass and I would kind of jump a little bit because I was in Germany, I was always afraid that somebody's coming to take my legs out or hit me or tackle me in training all the time. So when I came here, I would continue. I had that habit doing that kind of make a pass and move my leg out of the way until one of my friends who I was playing is like, what are you doing? Why do you keep doing that? I'm like, I'm worried somebody is like coming behind me to tackle me or something like that, but nobody was around. So that was kind of the mentality I had there because there every training was a war. Everybody wanted to play, everybody wanted to fight. And it's not about we're being mean or, we're still best friends after the training. Even if you tackle me, even if you hurt me, it's like, okay, I should have passed the ball faster maybe because you were that close to me. So it wasn't about, being mean or trying to hurt anybody, but the competition level of wanting to win every single action was there and I felt it. Here, I would say we needed more. We need to want to win more. And if I take, for example, I analyzed our whole season last year, again, watching the games, and I had time to analyze the season, analyze the stats. And the one trend of I saw in the stats of between winning and losing games wasn't XG, wasn't expected threat, wasn't any of those. Not box entries, nothing like that. It was duels. So anytime we won duels, or any time. So attacking duels, 1v1s, defending duels, aerial duels, all those that we've won in that game, we've won the game. Every time we've lost the duels, whether it's attacking, defending, whatever it is, we've lost the game. So that was the big picture that I saw from last season and analyzing the game.
The culture, Finnish football culture, this was a one, of course, the competition and the winning mentality, but how do you see the Finnish football culture? What are the, how to say, more, what are those characteristics of our culture?
The first thing that jumps out to me is hardworking. I think very, very hardworking people, whether it's women or men or whatever it is, coaches, players, I think it is a hardworking country. When you're there in that time, it is hardworking. I would say that it's a very also honest culture in terms of, telling you, okay, this is how it is, this is what's on my mind. It's very honest. That's why I really appreciate a lot of the relationships I have here, because it is honest. They tell me directly, and I'm that way as well. So I really, really appreciate that part of it. When it comes to football, it's completely different than other Portugal, Spain, though they're mad about it. It's there every day. They're playing. I don't see many kids. Of course, the weather affects it because you can't be outside all the time. You can't play outside all the time. So the culture in different, those kind of hotter countries, you see kids and they're playing all the time because 1 hour of training or 2 hours of training is enough. They tell you that, if you visit other countries, oh, we only train the 12-year-olds, 3 times a week, and then we try to bring it here. But those kids are playing all the time, all the time. It's in their culture. They're outside, they're playing, they have this, they have that. So here, I think we build maybe better athletes because they can play different sports. They can play hockey, they can play indoor sports, they can build those different kind of abilities that maybe other countries can't because they're so heavily focused on one sport. But yeah, I think that's really the main difference that I see is, of course, if we followed that path of that culture of just training 3 times a week, of course, it's not going to be enough. But I would say that I would like to see more and more. There are, and don't get me wrong, there are kids who are training. I see them on the field, even if it's snowing, even if it's raining. I see them. There's one or two or three on the field doing the work to try and improve. So I'm not saying that nobody does it, but it's different when it's hot all the time.
Yeah, and it's a one here. It's a one thing among other sports, but in Spain and Portugal, the football is the king
It is.
and queen.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah.
So that's maybe the cultural thing that we have a split our resources to all sports.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing either. And I think kids should be playing more different sports as well, because it helps build different aspects of their game. Hand-eye coordination, it helps them build, lateral movement if they're playing basketball or hockey, jumping ability, athleticism helps build it. So I wouldn't say that it's a bad thing. It's the same in Canada as well. I grew up playing many, many sports, and it has helped me, in that, being more athletic as compared to my friends who only played one sport. So I would say I would encourage them to play multiple sports growing up, and then after that, see which one you are more passionate about, because it's not just about being good at something. It's also people, are you passionate about it? Are you going to continue with that work rate and work effort for a long period of time, not just being motivated for 1 year and then after that stopping? So when you're choosing, it's about passion as well. Are you passionate about that? Are you passionate about working in that sport and trying to make a career out of it?
A little bit reflection of your past years in Finland in coaching. So how If you look at the mirror, how do you see yourself as a coach? If you look at the five during the last 5 years, what are the strengths of your coaching, and what are your weaknesses? What you are going to focus in the future?
Yeah, that's kind of a loaded question. At the moment, all I can think of are negatives, because that's all I've been kind of thinking about the past. You know, what can I do better? What can I do better? So I think that's been my main focus. I haven't really thought about the positives yet. I would say, let's start with the positives. I would say that I'm very hardworking. I think that's the number one thing for me. I want to also have a team that's hardworking and people around me who are hardworking. Football is not just football for me, as some people might say, oh, it's just football. It's not. And when you put in that much work for something, it's more than just football for me. So I put in a lot of work towards not only getting myself better, but also people around me better. I'm organized. I like to be on time. I like everything on time. I like to have everything kind of structured. And it also helps the players as well understand, you know, routines, and this is what we're going to do. And I like having those routines, not only for me, but also for them, so that they know what's happening. Yeah, I guess if honesty is a strength, could be a weakness sometimes as well. If people don't like what I say, but I think I'm quite direct with players and with people. And yeah, I like talking to people. I like connecting with people and speaking to them and trying to help them. I think that's the maybe one thing that the Finnish culture maybe has a little bit hard time understanding from my side, is just trying to help. You know, I don't want anything in return. I'm just trying to help you. And if you get to where you're getting to, then awesome. Then good luck to you, and hopefully you're going to do well there. But that's even if I don't coach you, even if it's just a player that's in a different team, and oh, maybe I can help her get there or whatever it is, or help her with something and give some advice here. So yeah. And then weaknesses, oof, I think you have to ask other people that. I think things that I could have done better, definitely time management, of where my resources or where my analyze the situation better. You can't do everything. I want to do everything. And, you know, of course, when you want to help players, you want to do everything you can. So I think that's also a weakness. And in Finland, we don't have the luxury of being with, you know, a top Bundesliga club where they have 5,000 people working inside the club. Maybe not 5,000, but many, many, many people working inside the club, and where you can only focus on one little thing. So I think that's something that I can do better and analyze where I'm going, what I need to do, where can I focus my best, you know, where I can put my energy best. And then I would say, yeah, I'm very passionate, as you know. So I can sometimes let emotions take over. I've gotten much better at it. Of course, I have emotions, and you know, when you're honest and when you're direct, sometimes emotions and honesty don't really go well together. So maybe I can try to, you know, be a bit, especially when I'm on the sideline or whatever it is, and I'm coaching. I think that can come out as, you know, not so nice sometimes to when you're honest or when you're frustrated or whatever it is, especially when you're losing. So it can come out not so good. Yeah, but there's many, 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 many other things I would say that I need to do better in the future to try, and depending if I'm a head coach or as an assistant coach, but as a head coach, definitely analyze the situation better in my next club, wherever I go.
Yeah, that's, for example, in the Finnish culture, not only sports and not only in football, but culturally Finland, they like cool-headed leaders, this kind of, you keep your head cool, whatever comes. But I think in a in what comes to football in international trends. So the coaches are really passionate. They show it. They show it on the pitch. They show it on the sidelines. They show it on the dressing room and everything. So they are passionate. Of course, what is the negative of the passion? Passion is the key thing that separates that the game is game, and after game is over.
I think every coach that I've seen in Finland is, no, they're not, I wouldn't say cool-headed. They're very passionate, and it's nice to see. They're very, Veikkausliiga, it's, when there's still football coaches there, they're passionate, or else they wouldn't be doing this job. So I would say what maybe on my side, or what how what's the best way to say this? How you people need to focus on the message and not the delivery. And I think a lot of people, from what my experience is, they focus too much on the delivery and they forget the message. So don't blame the person delivering. Don't, if it's a pigeon delivering a message and she has a broken wing, don't focus on the pigeon. Take the message and read the message, So I think a lot of what I've noticed is when I say something, I think the delivery is too much of a focus and they're forgetting the message that's being said, and the message that's being said doesn't connect inside the brain.
Yeah, it's a can be sometimes pretty difficult because the communication 80% is the body language
Yeah,
and
that's
20%
true.
is so it's always the whole communication is difficult because
Definitely.
we look at the different things. Okay, let's go to the a bit football trends. How do you see the development of football in the future? What are the biggest trends in
I think,
your opinion?
I mean, you can see it with the U21 national team, with the boys. So dynamic on how they play. I think it's getting more dynamic. I think players can play different positions and they're comfortable. They understand the game better. They're faster. They make decisions much quicker. And you can see it with those U21s, because I've never, being here now for the past 6, 7, 8 years, I've never seen a team from Finland play like that. And that, it's one of my favorite teams to watch at the moment because of how dynamic and how good those players are. They can play any positions, they can rotate, they can move, they're very skillful. So that's what I'm seeing a trend now of becoming. Football hasn't changed. It's still 11v11, 2 goals, same size field. So football hasn't changed at all. So I wouldn't say football is changing, but how the players are and how kind of the new ideas coming in and how it should be played is always, of course, changing in that sense. But it's much nicer to watch that kind of, dynamic players play. They're very, very fast, very, very aggressive, pressing high, fast transitions. So I really, really like, and you can see it in those players. And then on the women's side, what I've seen, it has been a transition game a lot of transition, transition, transition. Now I think it's becoming a bit more, positional and trying to build up and trying to kind of a positional play type systems. But I think the players are also getting more athletic and faster. I think it's still kind of that transition. A lot of the goals are being scored in transitions from crosses. So, yeah, the bigger, the faster, the more powerful, the more athletic players become, it's going to be even more dynamic, I believe.
Many guests of this podcast, they have said intensity, that intensity is higher. What do you say about intensity, and what is your definition of intensity?
In Finland or
In Finland and also generally.
intensity for me means that you are running. You are running all the time and you are putting, intensity means that you are not only running, but the ball's moving all the time. And for the ball to move all the time, you need to be moving as well. So you can't just stand still and move the ball because the teams can defend easier. So intensity means for me is you're moving at high speeds all the time. And you need to be extremely fit to be able to do that. And that's what, it is. It is very intense. It's high pressing. It's transition. It's running behind. It's getting balls behind the line. And so I'm seeing that. But I think when it comes to maybe if I talk about the our game in the women's league here, it's not so intense. I would say it's not so intense. There's only maybe a few games that are very, very intense. And I think if we compare the national team level of requirements physically, we're still very, very behind. Not many players are at that level. I would say if I can take from the whole league, I would say maybe roughly 10 are there physically that can maybe compete on a physical level in that sense. But yeah, intensity needs to be raised. The physical level needs to be raised from a younger age as well. And then the level of the trainings also need to be raised. We went to Hammarby to watch a match day minus one session. And that match day minus one session looked like the toughest session of our Tuesday, for example, which is the toughest session. And all the coaches who are with me from other teams from this league as well have, told me, yeah, this is for sure. That would look like our toughest session also. So they did a very, very difficult session on a match day minus one. And we asked the head coach, is that a normal session? They're like, yeah, we train like this match day minus one. It's tough. It's like, I mean, it's not tough, but for us, it looks very, very difficult because it's an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes of playing and 11v11 and then 6v6. And it's very intense and it's very long. And I don't think we could do that. So we're still very behind in that sense.
You mentioned dynamic football, and players can play many positions that they are running. And when you are keeping the ball, so you are finding the new opportunities and the places to support your teammates. What are the factors in the national football? What are the factors behind the trends? This kind of that game is becoming more and more intense.
I mean, it's the players. The players are getting better. The players are training better. The facilities are better for them. They're getting more from the clubs. They're getting more earlier as well, getting trained much better. I mean, the women's game has grown so much in the past 20 years or even 10 years. Like, there's a big boom now in the past 6 years, even how quickly it has grown and how good the players have become. So I would say that the players are just much, much better players, and they're faster, they're more athletic, there's more also interest of players wanting to play from a younger age. So now there's more players coming through compared to maybe 20 years ago where not so many were playing. So I think we're seeing a lot of players now get in at a young age and have a vision that, oh, I can be a professional. I can earn money and not have to work and just play football. And that wasn't the case back in the day. So I think it's going to get better and better.
Okay, players, how about tactics
Yeah.
and analytics data?
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Are those factors in behind the trend that they know more about football, they know about game, they know.
Yeah. I mean, the there's. You can spend your whole life on the internet and seeing everybody's tactics on what they think and analyzing the game, and coaches now are more aware. There's GPS and there's Y Scout and there's StatsBomb and there's different companies giving you stats of what's working, what's not working, where you can attack, where you can't attack. You can do it live as well, and you can see the trends live as the games are going on. So there's definitely a lot more information. There's a lot of information. And I think that's the hardest part as a head coach is what do you do with that information? Do you use it? I mean, I had everything. I had, you know, I had Y-Scout, I had StatsBomb, I had all the info, all the data from every game from our league. But how do we use it? I didn't use it on a weekly basis. I maybe used it after 6 weeks just to see where we're going, how we've done. Sometimes I did look at it every game just to see, okay, can I change something tactically? What are the other teams doing to win games? You know, the top three teams in the league were the most direct teams, and the teams at the bottom of the league were the least direct. So they were maybe more building in the back, and we were one of those teams. So yeah, data is being used quite a lot. GPS also, you know, inside the training, load monitoring. Of course, we have the polars and everything that we use, and we analyze the polars and see, okay, this player maybe has trained a bit too much. Maybe let's deload her on this day. And we see we have kind of a high speed calculator to say, okay, you need to do these many sprints, and it's divided by different positions. Okay, you midfielders need to hit this and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, there's a lot of different aspects of data that can be used, but how you use it and how do you simplify it enough to make it useful is the hard part.
What is your process in simplifying data and the information you are getting?
So are we talking physical data? Are we talking tactical?
I'm not separating any. Okay. Let's take that the whole volume. Okay. And the whole mass of the data.
Yeah.
How do you process in your coaching data and the information you are getting, and how do you prioritize those things in the simple messages?
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do, or what I did, was kind of see what our target is. What are we trying to achieve, you know, and have KPIs, for example, key performance indicators of what we want to achieve. Do we want to be more of a counter-attacking team? Do we want to get this many box entries? Do we want to get these many balls in behind the line? Like, do we want to win more duels, for example? So we kind of find out what kind of KPIs we want to look at. And then after that, we focus on maybe four or five key performance indicators of what we want to see inside the game. And is there kind of a trend of our game going that way? Or do we have to maybe go back and reanalyze and see how we can work on it in training a bit more? So for us, for example, one of the indicators was balls behind the line. So we want to attack, how many balls are we getting behind the line, and how many box entries are we getting? But first it was balls behind the line. We found that a lot of the balls that we were kicking were ending up getting headed back toward from their opponent center back or opponent fullback. And a lot of the goals we conceded was because of that. So we take the KPIs we see, and then we base the trainings or try to include some trainings to develop those things a bit better.
When you give those information to players, how they react to this information? Or do you filter information? Of course you filter, yeah. But because that's sometimes I have noticed that it's pretty difficult if they have own assumptions. And then you give some facts or this kind of that you have to do this because of this.
Yeah. I'm a coach who likes the players to be involved. You know, I want them to be involved in the process. They don't get to, you know, choose what we're training, and they don't get to choose how we play. But I also, you know, I welcome the feedback if it's there, but I want them to be involved. I want them to know what we're training, why we are training it. I do give them, you know, statistics when it's needed. Also good statistics, not just, you know, this is bad, because they need to also see that, you know, we're doing this good. So let's continue to do this. But let's also work on, you know, getting more balls, you know, from this side or whatever it is. So I do show them that I show them also if somebody is, you know, doing well individually, I show it a few times. Okay, this person, 10 out of 10 passes, 10 out of 10 duels won. So it kind of promote that sense as well to build the confidence of the player. But I try to make them involved in that session as well, or in those meetings, that they can know what's happening. And then, okay, this is what our stats look like during the weekend. This is who we're going to play against coming up next weekend. Here's what we're going to train this coming week. So I do like to have them involved in the process.
Okay, let's go back to a bit the football trends or the development in the future. How those development areas will reflect on Finnish football in different levels in the, for example, the first leagues in men and women, and also junior. Do we match those criteria which are needed? I mean, for example, intensity. And because it has been criticized quite a lot that our top junior levels are not good enough to bring players to the top leagues in Finland, even in Finland. But that's what I have heard.
I mean, on the men's game is completely different. I can't speak too much of it. I think on the women's game, we are bringing a lot of players from the younger age groups and bringing them to the top league, and that they are playing and they are on the national teams, and they're quite good. Some of them are going abroad, and I think you have to analyze a little bit what you want from those players. What does the club want? What is the vision of the club? What do you want to do with your young players? What do you want to achieve with them? What do you want to achieve with the first team? So, do you want to win every game and win championships and win that? Can you do that with your own players, your own academy players coming up? Or do you need to go and get maybe players from outside or other academies or whatever it is? Do you want to have a younger team? Do you want to have an older team? So that's the what I'm seeing in on the women's side, is there needs to be a clear idea of what the club wants to do with those players. Are you trying to, now it's a business financially, and now players are being sold financially, so it's good to bring in, money for the club in that sense as well, which helps the club, which helps the players. But I would say that first the clubs need to decide what do they want to do with, with those players that you have inside the club. And then after that, start the process of how are you going to build that academy, or build the team? Are you going to invest more in the academy? Then you need more coaches, then you need more staff, you need more resources, you need to have more games for them. I think that's something that I've seen, that there isn't enough here compared to visiting PSV Eindhoven, for example. They train, but they also play basically two different leagues, or they have a friendly game midweek because they want to have games during the week. Because once you go to the top level and you have to play a cup, your league cup, your own league, let's say Sweden, you got to play your own league cup, then you got to play the league, then if you're a top team, you got to play Champions League, and you got to fly, and you got to, so you have to get used to that
The
kind of
rhythm.
rhythm, which we don't have here. We just play Saturday, train, and then Saturday, train, then Saturday. And then once we get, we get to the cup, for example, and then those 3 days a week, three games a week type weeks are very difficult on the players. Not all of them can handle playing at a high intensity for three games in 1 week. And you can see it also in the national teams, as it affects the national teams, because the national teams have to play qualifiers and they play three games in a week, and it's difficult for some of the players, not all of them. I would say you can see four or five, they're really handling it, but those ones are ready for that next level.
And that's also what you mentioned about the physicality. that we have a bit comfort zone in this kind of a, that not too much games.
Yeah.
And then you are this kind of a quite rhythm is quite forecastable or.
Yeah. So I think that's what I've seen in other clubs and other top academies who are developing those players is they're playing more games and they're getting used to that rhythm. I wouldn't say when they're 12, but when they're getting to that 18, 19 and ready to jump to the first team, then they have to get used to that rhythm. I think when they're younger, then of course you keep them at a normal rhythm. But once they are getting to that 16, 17, 18, they're in a national team and they have to do those that kind of rhythm, then I think we need to add more games for BSM teams, for example.
What is your opinion? Why the Finnish football system, they will not, or the system will not create so many players to the top international leagues, or not at all, actually, because it's we are far behind the Danish, Swedish, Norwegian, in men, and also in women.
Yeah. There are a lot of players playing in top leagues, I would say, on the women's side. I think you see there's not Tottenham. They got a few players there. You know, Rosengard who have one or two players there as well, a few in Sweden. Denmark has, you know, the USA is a top league. So there are players, all of our national team players who are now are mostly playing in top leagues. And you can see it also on the men's side. They are the best players are playing in top leagues. That U21 team, I think a lot of those players will end up playing, if they aren't already, will be playing in top leagues. So I think we are creating for the amount of players that we have here. I think it is a lot to be. I mean, I don't want to be so negative. I know that Finnish people like to be quite negative about it, but it's there, and I think they just need to also see that it is there and not be so. We need to be critical, but I think what I've noticed here in Finland is once you start doing well, and once something goes right, then you want to, you know, but this is not right, and we gotta. So I understand that side of it, but there are very good players playing in high leagues. I think we should give some credit to the Finnish system there as well, because it's still, I want to say, a young country, young footballing country compared to the other ones who are, you know, have a long, 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 long history. The culture is different, like I said. So I think the ones who are wanting and putting in the work, you see them go. So it's not rocket science. You put in the work, you go to the training, you take care of business and training, and then you got to do more on your own time. You got to do more on your own time. So that's why I hate that kind of saying that, oh, the coach is developing players. I don't think that's true.
Yeah. Rosa Lappiseppälä, who coaches now in Italy. And she said that, okay, we have in Nordics the women's side or the woman's side, we have good tradition in football. They have been quite a long time playing. But the other countries are coming faster now. They are bringing more players. Of course, the profession of footballer is now also for women's side. It's acceptable, but they are going so fast in England, in Spain, in France, in Italy, and they are bringing more talents to the how to say international football. So she said that okay, we have tradition, but the tradition and the history of being a bit pioneer in women football is they are maybe overtaking it in a couple of next years. But of course it's about money and the culture, as you
It's
said.
only those two things. And of course, Rossi is absolutely right. She is right about that, but I also, I spoke to many clubs, and let's take Portugal for example. I spoke to the I had a question for the head scout there, and I asked him, how has, because the Portuguese league or Portuguese football was maybe behind Finland 5, 6 years ago, I would say. And I said to him, how did it grow so quickly? And he just basically said, well, first of all, culture. Everybody wants to watch football. Everybody loves football here, whether it's female or male, they will go and support football. And then all the top clubs, Sporting, Benfica, those are putting in so much money towards the women's programs. And that's one reason. He's like, it's pretty much just the money. That there's a lot of money being put in, a lot of money being invested from those top clubs, and also from the people inside the country, from the federation. They're putting in a lot of effort there as well, but it is mostly how much money and how the culture is there. So I think, yeah, I hope that it does grow, because there are a lot of good players, untapped potential here, but we need to also build something for them where they see what a top professional environment looks like, because it's we don't really see it on the women's game here.
How do you see the junior football in Finland, in both the girls and boys? How do you see, and how do you, how to say, compare those to the international? That how do we, quantity wise and the quality wise?
I mean, the system is, I mean, there are a lot of players playing. I think it's maybe it is the most popular sport when it comes to how many players are playing. The one thing I would say that compared to other academies or other teams inside Europe is there's no pay to play. If you get into an academy in a top, even a second league or third league or whatever it is, you're not paying to play, and I think that makes a difference, of course. So the environments are a little bit different when it comes to the women's side or the girls' side. The junior football has improved a lot. The coaches are getting better. The coaches are more knowledgeable. The players are more knowledgeable as well about the game. They see that there's a pathway to a professional career on the boys' side as well. It's so I like the system. I like how it is, but I would say that compared to other academies around, they have so much more players coming through. And of course, in Finland, it is about trying to get more players to join at a younger age and keeping them around, because once they get to 15, 16, I think there's a lot of dropout rate. 17, maybe a lot of them start doing something else or a university or things like that. So I would like to see more players stick around and play for a longer period of time.
They have said also that in the women's side, the young girls are going too fast to the Kansallinen Liiga, and then they quit because they have played already before 20s. They had played 3 years, 4 years, and they said that, do I play this next 10 years?
No, that's what I mean about quitting and stopping, because there's been a lot of good players who have stopped as well because of that. And that's mainly because of they can't make a career out of it here or outside. So of course they have to think about themselves and what they're going to do in the future. Football, if they can't pay the bills for them, and 19, 20, a lot of them are living alone and things like that and going to school. So they have to, I completely understand their side of it, that they have to think about themselves. So and of course they're not getting paid millions, so they can't really retire with that money. So I would like, it's again about money, funding, and that's why you see a lot of them getting to the league earlier, you can also, you know, they get a more professional environment, I would say, earlier. They get a tougher challenge. And then hopefully by 18, 19, maybe they go and get a full professional deal somewhere on the outside.
Rosa Lappiseppela also mentioned that now they reduced the team, Kansallinen Liiga, the number of teams. And she said that it's only aspirin for the headache. It's not the root cause of the... So it's... What do you say about that? Is it making the quality better? Or is it just aspirin? I like that.
I like that too. Yeah, I think that's a good way the way she put it. I'm like, I can't say it better myself. So yeah, I mean, what are we trying to achieve? I think that's the main thing. I want to know what we're trying to achieve. I want to, even if we make it smaller, I understand it's a good idea. I support it. I think we can have less teams. I definitely supported it back then. And, you know, I won't change my mind about that, even though it is 8 teams now. So it is what it is. Will it make the quality better? I don't think the bottom 3 will compete. I think it'll still be the top 3 maybe that are going to be competing with each other. So I would say it hasn't really changed much, but maybe it makes the games a little bit more challenging between maybe the top 1 and 4 or 5. Those will have quite good games and they play each other maybe more often. But I still want to see what are the clubs trying to achieve. I know the league is putting in a lot of effort and the league is doing a lot. I know that they're trying to do what's best for Finnish football. I know that Palloliitto's trying to do the same thing and they're putting in a lot of work and they're being criticized, and I don't like that. I mean, people have their opinion, but you know what they're doing does make sense for a league standpoint, but it's not going to work unless all the clubs are also putting in the work to try to develop their own club. Because it doesn't matter if, you know, it's just like putting tape on top of a leak. The leak is gonna, and if the other clubs aren't working to improve their side of what they're doing, and you know, getting more investment and getting more into their club and trying to develop that, it's not going to be a good ending for those ones. And those top 4 or 5 teams maybe are the ones putting in the effort. So I think, yeah, it won't work unless the clubs also put in the effort.
Sometimes in Finland, we go to the structural changes and make the things which are pretty easy to make. And then we wait for the result.
Yeah.
Or the result, different results. But the bottom line is that the root cause is maybe how we develop more quality players. Mm-hmm. To the top leagues, also in the men's side and the women's side. So that's the question we have to tackle in the future. Yep. But let's go to, you have been a talent coach. Let's go 3 different definitions: talent, player development, and potential.
Hmm.
Let's start with the talent. How do you describe talent?
I hate that word. I hate it. I hated being called a talent coach. I hated saying that this is a talent player, this is a talented player. That means nothing to me. Because for me, the ones who are where they are now, some of them maybe then weren't the most talented, but they were definitely the most consistent in their work. So
they're hardworking.
Hard work. They can be hard, but hardworking could mean you're hardworking for a month.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean nothing to me.
Yeah, long term.
Yes. So are you consistent with your hard work? Are you working hard for a long, long, long period of time to where you are eventually going past those talented players, so to say. So for me, that word means nothing. Means nothing to me. That's all.
But we had a seminar, and there there was a basketball coach. Mm-hmm. He said that, okay, there are talents genetically.
Yeah.
Talented players, which are, for example, in basketball, they are long and this kind of a different qualities. And also other talents, for example, hardworking is a talent.
Yeah.
So, okay, we cannot say that the skills only, but maybe the broad understanding of talent.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more of a me problem, because who am I to say that this person is talented? You know, what do my eyes, why are my eyes better than your eyes of saying that this person has talent or is talented or whatever it is? So I think to give so much power over that word to somebody who is a talent.
Magical skill.
Yeah, exactly. Like who, I have no idea. You know, for me, I just, you know, I saw when working with players, I saw potential. I think that's the word. I saw potential. There's different potential. Potential to make it to the first team. Potential to have a long career. Potential to be sold for a lot of money, for example. So there's different types of potentials of how I see the game. I see potential. You're going to have a long career in this league, and that's also could be a good thing. You're going to have a long career maybe in a higher league, but not, you know, a top league. Or you're going to have, you have a lot of potential to be, you know, sold for a lot of money, so we're going to maybe put a bit more effort on this, you know, just like PSV Eindhoven does as well, that they have these kind of different categories of players, and okay, we're going to put a lot of effort on these wingers because they're very winger based. They sell a lot of their wingers, so they kind of go and recruit the best wingers in the country, and they put all the effort on those wingers to try and help them so that they can be sold for a lot of money. So I see it as potential. Who has potential for different categories?
Okay, there is also the a bit difficult. Or the challenges with the definition of talent and the potential, because it's always also how do you see the potential, and how can you see the potential? But what is your tool? How do you see that this has potential, and how do you measure potential?
First, I take a look at their personality, how they are. You know, I've seen players who have, you know, a personality where they are, how they handle themselves in tough moments, how they handle themselves when things aren't going right, how they handle themselves in stressful moments, how they handle themselves when they're winning, how they handle themselves when they're being criticized, how they take feedback. So I take a look at that when, you know, looking at a young player, for example. Then comes the on-field stuff. There's a technical skills. Can they, how many actions can they do in, for example, you know, how many passing actions, how is their first touch? How is their ability to escape 1v1 situations? How is their intensity in the press, in their defending? So I kind of take a look at that, measured by maybe a few older age groups. So, you know, when I started out as a talent coach, I had a few players, but I would also bring them, for example, to train with the B-boys and see how they handle themselves in the B-boys, or how they handle themselves, you know, okay, you're 13 years old, let's bring you to the first team right away and see how you do. Let's bring you to the B team. Let's see how you do. Let's throw you in for a couple weeks with the first team, see how you handle that. Let's maybe put you into a friendly game and see how you do there. So just about testing, trial and error, and see which ones kind of, you know, surpass it or, you know, break through in that sense. But we have to be patient because everybody grows at a different rate. So if you feel that, okay, this player is doing well in their age group, but she's not quite ready, let's not rush it. Let's keep her there, see how she develops, try her there for a week, take her back, you know, and maybe 2 weeks after that, take her back. But some of them are just ready immediately. It doesn't matter what the age is.
Let's go to the third word, setting at the player development. It's a magic word. Mm-hmm. And magical words also in international football. And I have talked a lot with coaches and clubs, and they always said that their main focus is in player development. How do you see player development? You mentioned also in your, how to say, coaching that you like develop players. But yeah. How do you see it?
I like to see players develop. I think that's what I like. I like to see them develop. I don't like to take credit for developing players because I don't think I do anything to develop them. I think every player has the same opportunities, the same training sessions, the same gym sessions, but the ones who have developed more or developed faster, in my opinion, from what I've worked with, are the ones who are putting in more work in extra sessions, in the gym, by themselves, going to the field by themselves, putting in that extra work, because we're only with them for an hour and a half, 2 hours. So I can't take credit for developing players, because I think it's up to the player. They all get the same kind of chance to come in.
Same platform,
exactly. So they come in, they do the work. Are they asking for extra sessions? Are they asking for videos? Are they checking videos on by themselves? And there are players who do that, and those players are developing or having good seasons or now good careers, and they're doing that work without me. What I do, or what the coaching staff or what any coach can do, is give them the platform. Give them an environment where they can be comfortable, where they can come in and be themselves, where they can come in and be honest and, you know, seek help or ask for help and not be shy, because that's something I had a lot of problems with in Finland at first, is, hey, if you need help, come see me. And the first year, like, nope, nobody. They were just too, maybe one had the courage to do it. But, you know, it's your career, so you can't be held by your hand and, you know, the whole time. If you want something, go and get it. It's the same thing when you're in university or in high school and you need help with homework, or the teacher is there. They have those hours. Go see the teachers. They're there for you to help you, you know, with your exam or with your homework or whatever it is. Go there. Knock. Hello. I need help with this. And hopefully they help you.
How do you see it from the club's perspective, player development? Because they put all the clubs have it on the paper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's...
Do they walk the talk, or do they just talk?
I think for me, how I see player development in Finland is recruiting the best players. So by recruiting the best players, you can also offer them, it's offering the best players who you feel will develop a good environment for them to develop. So I don't think clubs are doing anything special in terms of different sessions or different whatever. It's offering those players an environment to be able to develop. Can you offer them extra sessions? Can you offer them video meetings? Can you offer them good gym programs? Can you offer them good facilities? So, of course, it should be in every club to develop players, but player development comes down to, are you offering them the environment to develop? Because I still put the development of players on the player themselves.
So the structure can help.
Structure is all of it. The structure of the club, the structure of what you can give, and that's why you see more players maybe develop better in a different club. Some players can develop, some players can have everything, but go to a different club who has maybe a little bit less and develop better because it's more focused towards that one player. So
How do you see players? What are the characteristics of players which are going to the top? What is your opinion about what are the main, because they are, I think generally they maybe are hardworking, but why somebody's going in a top? Is it the coincidence or is it some mentally issues, this kind of a psychological? Or
I see two things in all kind of top players that I've kind of worked with or are now in that process. The number one or the first thing I would say is they're very simple minded, meaning that I'm just here to play. I'm not stressing about this or that or this or that. Just give me a ball, leave me alone, let me play. And I think that's kind of they kind of
focused.
not even focused. Sometimes they're not even like, okay, they're just there and they have this simplicity of not taking this external, I gotta do
Straight,
this, yes, I gotta do that. The coach is telling me this. Just, I had one player who is unbelievable that I just to joke with her, I would say, hey, what day is it today? And she would look at me like, no. And she like wouldn't have an answer. And for me, I can put her fullback, I can put her midfield, I can put her anywhere. And she just goes out and plays and works hard, of course, but just plays. And the second thing I would say is that they're able to forget immediately. They erase everything that just happened. So they play, they make a mistake, it's erased. They score a goal, boom, okay, next one. I don't care about that. So they're always erasing what happened, if it's a mistake or whatever it is. So they're always on to the next action, next move all the time. But then comes the hard work, then comes the passion, then comes the taking the feedback, then comes the are you putting in 100% effort, not only in the training but on the outside as well. When you go home, are you living like a professional? Are you taking care of yourself? Are you eating well? Are you sleeping well? All those things that a coach can't help you with, that can't be there, planning those things for you. Are you taking care of yourself in that sense? But yeah, that's what I've seen. What I've seen, and of course, they have a support system, a very good support system. Me being with the younger ones, and I've had the privilege to coach the same players for a long period of time. I've built, of course, good relationships with the parents, and I see how the parents are as well. So the parents are a very, very big part
They're
of,
committed.
yes, and they're a very big part of the players' lives and how they help them. And for me, I've always wanted to include parents in that process as well. And just some parents also just give me feedback. Hey, should have maybe we should we need you to do this more. I'm like, okay, I'll take the feedback. I really like interacting with the parents because those parents also help me as a coach when they are at home. How's she doing? Okay, maybe I won't talk to her tomorrow. So those kinds of things are also very, very helpful.
If you are in charge of Finnish football,
I won't ever be in charge of Finnish football.
let's take it hypothetical.
Okay.
So what tools or what kind of actions we have to do here that we make more players to the top levels, level in European football leagues? What we have to do?
Honestly,
You can restrict only to the women or the woman
yes.
side, or but do you have, how can we Because this is the question we are asking ourselves, that they say that, okay, optimistic point of view, that we are going ahead. We are going ahead. But are we going as fast as the competitors and the countries which are putting a lot of effort, for example, in women's side?
I think we have to remember also that football is not everything. I think that's the number one thing, that there's other people here have other interests as well, and that's the kind of beautiful part about Finland, that it doesn't revolve around football. So it gives players and it gives coaches a place to grow without that craziness and that pressure and that stress and that, because once you put all in, you have to succeed. You have to, if you're putting it all in. So I think what Finland has that's really good here is a great place for people to grow and learn. So I would say that what they're doing might not go as fast as people want it to go, but it is growing. And because you're getting better coaches, we're getting better players, more people are interested in coming here. Education system of the licenses is getting better, better, and better, better, and more people are applying for those licenses and learning, and the profession of being a coach is also growing, whereas few years ago, 10 years ago, it wasn't there. So I think
So time,
give it, I mean, you have to give it time. I mean,
patience.
patience, time. I wouldn't want to also, yeah, it's for me, I wouldn't have gotten to where I'm at if it wasn't for that, for people giving me patience, giving me time, letting me grow. And it's the same thing for the players as well, is that we can have environments for them where they can feel comfortable also to not choose football as well and have something else to do. Because if you go to a different country, all they have is football. And then if football is gone from their lives, they have nothing. So do we want that for Finnish people here, that if all they have is football and then they can't contribute anything else to society after that? I wouldn't really.
Maybe we want to take success.
Yeah.
Who does not?
I see it as that this is a great place for somebody to come in, learn, grow, be comfortable, be given the time, and letting that person learn on their own time. And then when they're ready to go, then they can go somewhere where they can experience that. Because if they, let's say if they stop playing, at least they have education here. They have other things they can come and do. They can be, they can come back to university, which is free. So they have all those things. So, well, I'll ask you a question. Would you take away free, let's say we put everything into football, would you take away free university? Would you take away healthcare? And would you take away the social system that you have here to put into football? Let's take all that money, put it into football.
Maybe I play like a tennis ball. I give it back to you that okay. Maybe this is not the black and white question about how to take for example the military services or the military defense systems to football. I said that do we have enough resources to develop our football to the international level? And is it the objective that we have to be in the top 10 countries in the Europe, or do we accept a bit lower objectives and then we create from that angle? So I think if we even manage to put the resources, the current resources better, allocate better, so maybe we can foster a bit. So that's maybe because usually it's a bit we take this kind of a, that the welfare society that okay, those European countries, they have a culture, we have a welfare system, and we have a risk, a low risk country. We do not like risks. But nevertheless, I maybe ask the question back to you or our audience that can we have with better resource allocation, better results? And I said yes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think how I don't know what the resources are being spent on. So I have no idea. I don't have that knowledge. I think maybe you do and you other people know what the resources are being spent on. But I think for sure resources can always be spent better. And I think that's yeah, because I don't know what they're being spent on. So I can't say that they're doing a bad job there. I don't have that much knowledge about the system in Palo Alto or wherever is, you know, or the league or clubs. I mean, some clubs can spend their resources much better, for sure. Getting more staff, getting more, you know, getting more coaches in for to develop those players and put focus on maybe the top players that can be developed or the top teams that can be developed, and then eventually develop the team, develop the league, and maybe sell them, bring more money into the club, and then keep doing that cycle.
Maybe it's because I don't exact numbers, but the Football Federation, they have about revenues 30 million or the and Olympic Committee, they have 10 million. And they are a little bit criticizing the Olympic Committee that they have to focus on the really international sports and this kind of a top level sports. And I think the resources are quite limited. And they change some wordings in their strategy that now we focus on huippu-urheilu instead of kaikille liikuntaa. So I mean that we have to prioritize. Our strategy has to be clear enough that do we want to develop, for example, some numbers, a number of players to the international level teams, or do we move our masses. So that's maybe this is a not a tricky one, but I think we sometimes we want to take the only the fruits from the long hanging trees, but there are no fruits if you are not feeding the tree and seeding the feed first.
That's true.
But nevertheless, let's go back a little bit the environment. The Finnish football. You have been here years now. How do you see the platform? We discussed about the platform. Of course, now we have a quite big country, and there are poor and good ones, the clubs and the facilities. But how do you see the facilities from the players' point of view? Are they good enough? Is the platform good enough? Or do we have to develop? Of course, we have to develop. Nothing is static, but
If we compare it to the top academies, then no, that's not good enough. I think for sure the facilities and everything is definitely. Some clubs do have nice ones. Of course, in Honka we have Esport. There's everything we need there. SIK has a nice stadium. Ilves now has a great stadium. I know there's more stadiums being built, but I would say facilities wise, of course, it needs to be better. But for what the clubs have, I think they're using it as best as they can. Structure wise, I always go back to how much people are around the team and around the staff and how much work each coach has to do. And I think that's not very clear, and it's not very, what's the word here, focused on what they need to do to develop players or develop a team, because they have to do so much around. So I think that's the biggest thing that all clubs have to get better is get more coaches and more full-time coaches inside the teams so that they can focus on developing the players, focus on developing the team, and not have a million other jobs to do inside. You know, having a physio, having a physical trainer, having a kit manager, having kind of a team manager, having all that around the team, so that the coach, having an assistant coach, having a video analyst, having a mental coach, so all those things need to be, you know, not for every team, but of course for those top teams that are competing at the highest level, need to have kind of that base structure set.
So internationally relevant platform.
Yes, exactly. And I think I always say that Finland is building the best assistant coaches in the world, because they are so, every head coach here has to do everything, and they have to do all of it. So as a head, you don't get to be really a head coach when it comes to an international level type, because the head coach is more managing and taking care of, you know, talking to players and giving players the time, and, you know, having the assistant coaches do a lot of the, you know, analysis and stuff like that. So we are definitely building the best assistant coaches in the world.
Okay, our 90 minutes is coming into the end, but a couple of questions. Yeah. The first is your future objectives in your career. What are your objectives in the coming years?
Yeah, I want to continue to coach. Of course, I want to continue to help players, whether I'm a head coach or an assistant coach. I don't think it really matters to me as long as I keep learning. I think this profession is, you never stop learning, and it doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. You're always learning, and you're always trying to get some new ideas. So I think that's the main thing for me. Whether it's in Finland or outside of Finland, I'll probably make a decision in the next couple of weeks and see where I go. But I think I definitely want to continue at the top level and maybe try to challenge myself in something a bit more uncomfortable.
So outside of the comfort zone.
Yeah, for sure.
And the last question, tips to our junior coaches. What your tips, practical tips, tips for to make our coaching better?
I think the main thing that I would say is try to find who you are first as a coach before you step into that profession. I'm sure you're going to find it along the way, but have some idea of what you want to do and what you want to be. And if that's being yourself, I think that's the best version of you that you can give out to people. And then the second thing is manage your time well, because especially if you're a head coach in the youth side and you're by yourself, maybe you're doing it part-time or you're doing it full-time, you can't do everything. So try to pick the most important things that will help the team first, and then try to also help the individuals, but manage that time wisely so that you don't get burnt out, because it's very easy to do so. But don't drop your standards because of it. I think you have to understand that you can still have high standards and ask the club to have high standards as well. But manage your time wisely.
Thank you, Omar Adlani, former head coach of Honka, women first team.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to discuss 90 minutes about football.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.